And welcome everyone to another Sunday afternoon here on Revolution Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts, and I'm getting a little bit of an echo here. Not sure where that's coming from. But yes, welcome to Cancel the Cabal on Revolution Radio. I want to introduce, I have two guests on. Both of them are returning, and both are lawyers. First is Scott Stapney. His websites are scottstapney.com and stapneyforjustice.com. Scott is a Washington State lawyer, and he's been working for the Stapney and Trumbull, I believe it is, LLC, out of Washington. And the second, I'm not sure if she's back yet, but Sherry Wisdom out of Denver, Colorado. I want to welcome Scott first.
Well, thank you, Steve. I want to make a couple of corrections, though. One, my business address is stapneylawfirm.com. We're no longer with Stapney Trumbull, and I can explain that as we talk on further what happened to Stapney Trumbull. And that's all you need to know at this point.
Okay. Well, sorry about that. I'm not up to date on some of those things, but are you back with us now, Sherry?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Sherry Wisdom, you're in Denver, Colorado, and you're also a arbitrator, a former lawyer.
That's correct. It's kind of consultation more and dealing with the kind of issues that seem to be part of the topic today that are more international. That's kind of the direction that I'm going with this.
Okay, well, I wanted to bring Scott back up because he's got a very, very interesting case. He's been working for people for the past number of years, working against the banking system and the banks that are fraudulently taking homes from people, taking them for a ride, so to speak. Can you remind us a little bit about your case, Scott? I know it's been close to, at least 6 or 7 months since the last time I had you on, the last time we talked about some things.
Yeah, I think back then we talked about the Bradburn case, in which we were able to get a house returned, and ultimately the case settled because the trustee in that case, who was supposed to be acting like a judge, was the subsidiary for Bank of America, the entity which claimed the house. But basically what has been going on is I've had a series of cases, and those cases have caused me to come up against a common enemy, which is a group. It's actually a common group that includes bankers, servicers, which are like hedge funds, and actually judges and the judicial system, because they kind of operate as a group to throw people out of their homes. And so now, like in Seattle, I know we have 30,000 people that are out on the streets, and I've been told that over 60 million people have been evicted in the United States. Now, it's not 60 million houses have been taken, because a lot of times you have the families that are evicted, the two kids, the parents, maybe an elderly person. And so that's what is I've been doing. And as a result of that, because I'm more concerned about the cause and the purpose and stopping what I consider to be this form of genocide, and I'm not so concerned about the money, I keep fighting, and the banks don't like that, and the courts don't like that. And so it feels like to me, and of course, you know, they've got their side of it, and all I can do is tell you my side of it, but it feels like to me I am being they're trying to stop me And not just me, and any lawyer out there who is willing to actually fight for his clients and says, hey, my purpose is not your money. I'm not going to do your money tilt and make my practice of law about the money. My practice is going to be to achieve justice. Then what they will do, it's been my experience, they will come after you and they will try to get rid of you in any way they can. And this is going on across the country. But the other thing that's interesting to note about it is it's not just about the foreclosure people. It's anywhere lawyers try to do their job as intended by the framers of our Constitution and actually practice law to achieve law consistent with justice, they're not allowed to do so. I mean, in many regards, I think that our system is a fraud. I mean, we talk about having a jury system. Well, in the state of Washington, for example, less than 0.5% of the cases ever go to trial. And even probably half of them are to juries. So you've got a system where we claim we have this great jury system of justice. Where are they? I mean, if less than 0.25% of the people accused of crimes or who have disputes actually get to have their case heard before a court with a jury, where the jury gets to make the decisions, I mean, do we have a jury system?
Exactly. Well, I've actually heard, Scott, that the statistics are somewhere in the vicinity of 18 million homes in America are vacant because of foreclosures or evictions or some sort of a dispute.
But many of those homes that are vacant, we don't even know about. I mean, there are a lot that the banks just let sit there, and people have been thrown out of their homes and onto the streets. And even with 18 million, and I think those are old figures, because the last time I was talking about how many people were out on the streets, I was talking about 30 million. And then someone corrected me and said the numbers were more like 60 million. And guess how many of those people die?
I'm not sure. Probably 5%.
You know, that's just it. Nobody's sure because the government doesn't watch them.
Right.
But what they have studied a little bit is the impact on neighborhoods. Blood pressure rates go up. Heart attack rates go up. I mean, the impact of these foreclosures, it's not just on the people foreclosed upon, it's on all the people around them. It's upon all of us. Because when you watch your neighbors vanish, when you watch people abused, when you watch on TV the police come in and hammer people, the effect of that is to say, to make you scared.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta admit, I'm going up and I'm dealing with the court system and I've got now an attorney general, federal judge, and all these people, and they're taking after me, and I truly believe that they are wrong. Of course, they never took after me before I started fighting for people and before I refused to make money my God.
Yeah.
And it does. It makes you scared because there's no predictability anymore. Law is supposed to be about predictable. You're supposed to be able to say, well, I know if I do this, they can't do something to me.
Yes.
But it's not that way anymore.
No.
I'd much rather have computers decide many issues of law rather than judges. Because, you know, a lot of law is basically just fact-oriented. You can just say, okay, you meet that criteria, you meet that criteria. A computer could do that just as good.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure the judges would do as good a job on a lot of things. Some things you have to have resolved based on credibility, but what's happened is, especially in the federal court, they get to decide based on their own view of credibility. In the federal court, the initial standard you have to meet is whether a judge finds your claim plausible. And just who are these judges? Are they people that know the regular guy on the street? Do they live with most of us? I mean, do I really want to put my fate in what some federal judge thinks is plausible? It kind of seems like they're trying to make them godlike figures, which I don't think they are.
Well, that brings up an interesting thing there. It's been, I think it was back in August of last year, Scott, that Sherry did a show on the Irish Network that both of us are on with the administrator and the owner of the network. And they talked about evictions, and they talked about the banking system and the court system over there in Ireland. And I believe there's something written in the Irish constitution that says if there's a vacant home, one can physically gain access to that home and use it for squatting purposes. And it's written in the Irish Constitution that they can legally do that.
And I would think that should have been something our founders thought about, but they probably never thought our banking system would become so evil.
Right, right. Sherry, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think that this has been going on for a very long time. I don't think that this is something new. I think that I'm watching now in the European countries that I've been dealing with, and it seems to me that most of the governments are basically run how our country was run somewhere around the 1930s, where the mafia had the biggest hold. And I'm not, like, that's not a pun. I'm not joking about that. It's the money that is being funneled through the judicial system for the banking systems, for the governmental systems that are put into place for suppression. They're not unintentional. It's not a joke. It's not something that they just happen upon. It's on purpose. And you can see this in a lot of the ways that the laws are written. They have the loopholes, right? I mean, that's my job, is I come in and I find the loopholes. And almost every law has them for the purpose of themselves, not for us. But if you don't know the law, then, you know, you kind of get screwed. But if you do know the law, the banking systems know the law, they created it. So they know, they left the back door open for themselves on almost every situation. And that's where we have to find out what that back door is instead of fighting it from the front.
Yeah, but the question is, will it matter at this point? I mean, at a certain point, your institutions get so corrupt they don't work. Like when I say that we struggle from judicial corruption in America, that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm saying every judge is taking a bribe. I'm just saying that the system is not working the way it was established to. And at this point, it's very hard to know what is going to happen. And it's not just in foreclosures. I see it happening.
No, I agree. And I think you're right. I mean, I have the joke that, and I mean, it's not a joke, but in my practice and the things that I've been, you get as much justice as you can pay for, right?
Exactly.
And then on top of that, you also, it's Russian roulette. I don't care how much money you've got. You piss somebody off, somebody above you needs a better name, needs to show you as an example, you're screwed. It doesn't matter who you think you are. I've seen a lot of judges, I've seen a lot of people who thought that they were above the rest get fucked as soon as the system starts to get a hold of them and they start to think that they are above that system, it's over.
All right.
So
please watch it there, Sherry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyway.
You sound like a good lawyer, passionate lawyer. I like passionate.
there's things about our society, and that's when you say, well, is it too late? Is it? Yes. Yes, it's too late. The system is broken. The system is so absorbed with the corruption that we're talking about.
But
that
is it broken?
It can't be fixed. It's got to be rebuilt.
Is it broken?
So let's talk about that, because I was thinking about it. I do a show on Monday nights on a different network called Taking Back Our Country. And we start every show from we discuss the difference between a representative republic and an empire. And of course, an empire considers people its subjects, where in a representative republic, the people are supposed to be sovereign and they elect representatives for a very short period of time and to make laws for their benefit. And the laws are for the purpose of protecting those God-given rights that each of us has by virtue of our humanity. And it's very easy to see the difference between an empire and a representative republic. And what we have here is an obvious empire still trying to persuade the people, so they don't have an out-and-out revolution, that it's some sort of representative republic, which it isn't, because at this point, you can't have a representative for a million folks. I mean, money gets in the way, and it all becomes about the money.
What?
So the question is, how do we, and this is something we explore on our show, is how do you do a revolution in times like this? One of my co-hosts is a local newspaper editor, and she talks about how you really have to start locally. You've got to get in there, into your local government. You got to get up out of your seat. You got to stop watching TV, and you've got to go and get involved in the public elections, assuming
I think it starts.
It works.
I mean, yeah, but I'll be honest. I think it starts even before that, because how many people actually know what's going on? I mean, you're talking about on your own blog.
A lot more. From what I'm seeing and what I believe is that we are coming to a time of consensus when we're all knowing this system doesn't work. We're having trouble trying to decide what to do about it. We got, like, for example, Donald Trump, who I don't think represents Republicans or Democrats. He represents a lot of people that know, hey, there's something wrong here. We don't care what you call it, but
I like Trump.
I don't particularly like him, but I like him a lot more than I did like him. And you know, when you compare Trump, who kind of represents the people who are actually saying, hey, we don't like this two-party tyranny, we don't like this system, then you've got Hillary, the queen of the two-party system, who represents pretty much everything that's wrong with it, and you see why it's not working. And then take a look what's going on in the Supreme Court. We're supposed to have a system of government where we have a separation of powers. Yet what is delaying the nomination and appointment of a new Supreme Court judge? The two-party system. What the heck are
they don't want the check and balance. And that's, you know, see, here's the whole catch here. And this is so interesting, because in dealing with these other countries, they have not adopted the check and balance. And so now America is in this situation where it took that on, but then decided, oh, well, you know what? That's not enough profit for the bankers, the pharmaceuticals, the government, you know, whatever you get into.
Military contractors. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, that's not. So all of a sudden they're trying to retract it as fast as they can with amendments and bullshit under the table, distracting people, the false flags, all of these things. People are thinking, oh, they're trying to kill us. They don't give a shit about us. They want their own. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
I'll tell you what I see a lot, and it's really scary, is I see people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and the banks are going after them to evict them. And what I see is happening is the elites aren't really wanting to deal with talk about Social Security and entitlement programs. They'll just evict these people and let them die. I mean, it's the money. Form of genocide. Yeah, everything tilts toward the money. It's money.
And it's more than. I'm sorry. I get so excited.
No, I agree. Me too.
It's more than just the money, too. I mean, let's be realistic about this. If you take a look from a business point of view, now I'm not talking about from a humane, normal point of view, but from a business point of view, once a human being reaches a certain age, they're no longer productive. They then become a dependent as opposed to providing, putting into the system, doing the drill of going to work every day, blah, blah, blah. Well, now they're supposed to be getting their payoff, right, for doing all of that. Well, if they can cut that short, how much are they saving?
Well, I want to get into something. I don't believe it was an accident that some of the rhetorical devices that they started using when Obama was campaigning back in 2007, you know, there was a lot of questions that would come up to him, like, well, I think one of his examples was if Granny needed a heart transplant at the age of 95, I think he had some sort of a meeting with, I don't know who it was, the granddaughter or the daughter or something, and he just flat out told this woman that, well, she's 95, you know, she's lived a good life, and maybe we should just give her a painkiller and send her home instead of giving her that heart transplant.
You know, it's interesting because then you see this Rockefeller guy who's well over 100 getting a heart transplant because he can afford it.
He's had six hearts.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's
six
it.
Heart transplants at the age of 99. Or maybe he's turned 100. I don't know.
I think he's over 100. But
is he 100 now?
But that's it. And that's what's going on. We are watching a genocide here, folks. I mean, we think back to Nazi Germany. They weren't telling folks that they were sending these people into the incinerators. They were just taking them from their homes, and then we know what happened now. But I mean, how are we any better? And another thing, comparison to Nazi Germany, is what happened is they had a Weimar Republic. They actually had laws, but they were all eviscerated. Nobody told them that they weren't really working anymore, but it was obvious. I mean, isn't it obvious to us as we watch police abuse three or more people a day? And like the media makes it try to appear it's about race. It's not about race. It's about letting each and every one of us know that they can do it to us too, and they will. I mean, that's why, you know, part of me is scared because I know that the courts will do what they want. But there's also a part of me that says I'm more angry. And that's why when I talked to you earlier, Stephen, about this show, I said, I wonder how many revolutions work. I mean, the way they got rid of the Nazis in Germany was they had an invasion. Of course, the Nazis were busy invading everybody, kind of in the same empirical mode that we are. And the question becomes, you know, what are we going to do about this? I've dropped my...
I see you dropped your camera there.
I guess I'll go down like this. But the question really becomes, what do we do? Is it possible to have a revolution in America? I mean, they want us to think we can have a revolution at the ballot box, but we know that 75% of the people in this country believe our government's corrupt, and yet we have durable incumbents. They reelect 90% of them.
Yeah.
Something's not working. It doesn't, it's like Common Core. 2 + 2 no longer equals 5, no longer equals 4. It equals 5 or whatever they want to tell you because it doesn't make sense and it's not accurate.
Well, there is a viable there is a viable option out there, Scott. There's movements all over the country, a lot of them over in Oregon and the state of Washington. It's at a local level. Someone can, people have stopped fracking in their area. They have stopped multiple mega corporations from doing things. If people can get together and write a local law and pass it at the local level, they can do just about anything they want. And I might think that that might even include the banking system.
There have been communities that have imposed moratoriums on foreclosure, some successfully, others not so successfully. I mean, you get into all sorts of legal questions about it. But I think that's what it does boil down to. I mean, because I don't see how we, no matter how mad we become, even if we were to enlist all 60 million people who have been dispossessed, we have a government that employs a mercenary army. And they use that mercenary army, and there's nothing that leads me to believe that the American Empire's army would be like the Russian army and stop when they saw the Russian people before them. I mean, we live in very scary times, and I just read an article, I don't know if it's true, that said, you know, no matter who gets elected president, it won't make a difference because there's two different governments there. And I don't necessarily believe that, but then I don't really know what to believe in this country. I don't trust the media. I don't trust the courts. I mean, who do you guys trust?
Well, you can't trust the media because, you know, you're not going to be able to criticize live on TV or live on the radio, terrestrial radio, who signed your checks, whether it be a pharmaceutical company or military industrial complex contractor or a mega bank. You're just not going to be able to criticize your boss.
Right, because it's all about the money.
Yes.
That's I think, is the central problem. What has happened in the time of the Bible, they said the love of money was the root of all evil. I think now, because money has gone all the way to the top, and there's so much of it in the stratosphere that most of us don't have enough to use it as a medium of exchange below to live, we have got a problem where the money itself has become evil. When you look at just, and it's been going on for a long time, when you look at decision, what type of electricity are we going to use? Did we use Tesla's version, which would have been free and better for the people? No, we went with Edison so J.P. Morgan Chase could make money. When it came time to looking at hemp, and when they started to make oil-based plastics, did they want to go with hemp? They'd made Model Ts out of hemp. I mean, hemp is a great way to make a biodegradable plastic-type substance. Did they want that? No, they went with DuPont. They went with the textile companies. I mean, we have been tilting toward the money forever. And at this point, we've got it so tilted and so accumulated at the top that labor is worth nothing, which means that people are worth nothing. And so if we as people plan everything we do around money, we are totally screwed. Now, there may be some good things that flow out of that. It may be that money causes us to coalesce in a certain way to do certain good things. But from my perspective, it's mostly coalesces to make people do bad things. I mean, think if we had the money that the 1% has to do actually good things. I mean, even when you think about it, what does money do? It makes it the great equalizer. You can't eat money, although I'd like to...
The problem is, though, is that when you do hand it out like candy, people suck it up and they don't... There's no... Money is a vibration. It's not just about the finances. It's not just... There's a reason that there's the symbolism on the dollar bills, on the bills that we use. It's a... If you look at how the government uses things, like with the media, with TV, with all of these things, they're using tones, they're using vibrations to manipulate people with their minds, with their thoughts, their emotions. Money is the same thing. And it's like money actually originally, it's actually the vibration of survival. Right? It's like how we accumulate love, how we feel about ourselves, if we buy something special, if we do this. If you think of the actual content of it as opposed to how it's being used, and then you take a look at the planet and how fucked up people are, and how everybody's running around trying to push it outside themselves, trying to, you know, thinking that Christ is coming to save them, thinking that the aliens are coming to save them, somebody's coming, so they can just sit and do nothing.
I hear you, Sherry, but here's my point is, you're saying that money is kind of a vibration for everything, and I'm saying that that's not what we need. Each thing, love, each thing can have its own vibration. My problem with money is it does take over everything. Like, let's think about who we want to rule us. I think I would much prefer a leader who's an artist, who's spiritual, rather than somebody who knows how to make money. Because...
But I have a question.
Sure.
I'm going to be honest with you. Like, even that, when you said that, it immediately, like, I don't want to be ruled by anyone.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
I want there to be somebody who stands up for the people, because that's the government is not supposed to be a ruling factor. It is supposed to be a collective of what we're telling them to do.
Exactly. And I agree. I take back what I said completely. Yeah. I believe. But that's the question. Who do we want to represent us? Do we want, like, farmers that till the ground, that actually grow the thing? Or do we want these mega billionaires and people that all they know how to do is make money, and that's their only claim to fame? And for the most part, I think they're all sociopaths.
Well, it goes beyond that, Scott.
I
think it it goes to the fact that a lot of these families you're talking about, they've been brainwashed from a very early age that they are supposed to be the rulers. They're supposed to be the controllers.
It's not even, I mean, do you really, I mean, you guys, you got to think about how we live our own lives, because here's the thing about it. When something is handed to you, and something is, it's like just the way it is, all the people around you are just that way. It's like, think about the groups that you hang with, the people that you know, your friends. If all of a sudden somebody came in and said, okay, Stephen, I'm going to make you the president of the United States today.
No, thank you.
And, well, I know, but you had to take it, let's say. Okay, so... You have to take it. And then all of a sudden, they tell you, okay, now you have to pick 5 people to do these jobs that are going to stand by you, blah, 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 right? Well, you're not going to go and probably, and you only have like 12 hours to do this, by the way. It's like a limited time, and you only have so many people that you can select, and you must know them, blah, 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 all these different things. You're going to go to the circles you know of. Even if you don't know them personally, you're going to go to into your files in your brain and go back to the best people that you know who can do that job. It's about your reference. It's about who you know, about the same thing like those Indians sitting on the beach, right? Because if it's not in your consciousness, so if for them, it's not in their consciousness that other people live any different. Even if they see it, it's like us looking at the homeless going, oh, that's how they feel. Oh, poor us.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're peons. We're the ants. Yeah.
Well, I tell you one thing, Sherry. If I was given control, one of two things would happen. I would be dead inside of 6 months, or everything would be eliminated, and everything would be a lot better on its way to recovery in 6 months.
I mean, that's what I like about Trump, to be honest with you. And he probably will be assassinated if he even gets in. You know, there's so much that controversy about whether or not he's just a farce so that we can make sure that Hillary gets her place, because we all know from history
Well, first the white man, I think second the black man, and then the woman.
I think he's also serving another purpose, too. He's serving a purpose to bring these conspiracies to light. And I still don't like the word.
Yes.
I still do not think the two words should be used together, conspiracy theorist, because it's really an oxymoron, in my opinion.
I totally agree.
There are no theories. There are either conspiracy facts or conspiracy fallacies. There's nothing in between, really. But
And there's enough proof. It's not, you can't say, when you have enough proof, like, I mean, when you have people coming out and saying, okay, this is how it is. This is, you know, it's no longer a conspiracy. It's not a guess anymore.
No.
We know that this is going on. And I think that that's what he was saying earlier, is that it's like, now what step do we take? And the thing is I think that it has to go into the individual, because people are so ignorant and they want to have a leader. They want to have followers. And that's why I said that to you, is that it's like, we have to stand up as the people who are going to make the changes and say, you guys do need to get off the couch. You guys do need to start doing some things. Even if you don't want to participate in government, fine, grow your own food, get a chicken. I mean, you know, whatever That's you right. need to do. But it's like, we need to start pulling back in our power that we've handed over, because people are freaking lazy.
Yeah. I mean,
so that's the question. How do we take it back?
Peaceful noncompliance. You know,
that's when they come down on you, and then they're doing exactly what he's talking about. It has to be within. Again, it's like, I don't really know how to do this, but I have an idea. It's about getting into the system. It's just like, that's why I have a law degree. I don't practice law anymore. I'm not even in the bar for the last 2 years, because I'm not signing up for that shit. I have 11 years of college so that I could learn the system, so that's how you make the change. If you don't know the rules of the game, you're not going to win. You have to learn how it all is working so that you can make the changes from within the system. Find out who is running the show. Go to them directly, or affect them directly, so that they then think it's their idea. It's just like being in a courtroom. It's just like being with the jury. You want them to think that whatever you're convincing them, whatever your idea is, it's really their moral value.
I got a story for you. I got a story for the both of you. I got a friend over in Australia. She's just outside of Melbourne, in Victoria there. She's in a small community, a small town, not large at all, but she started looking into the water issue in her area, and she did some researching, and it turns out that the company that runs the water supply and owns the water supply in her area is a subsidiary of, I think it's Pepsi and Halliburton, Dick Cheney.
Are you talking about Gale?
No. But she started to do some researching, and she's gotten a hold of some local people in her area. They're going to get a $2 million bond from a billionaire around the area, and they're going to go after this corporation and take back the water, because Pepsi and Halliburton are trying to control the water in her area.
Here's the problem with that. Here's where they're going to get their heads bonked in.
Well, that's why they're getting $2 million, and they're going to write a local law.
$2 million is not shit. I mean, I'm not trying to put this down, and I hope it does happen. But in reality, and the reality of how things work, because I worked for the EPA for years. You know, I was one of the very first Superfund coordinators and all of these other things, because I was going to change the world. It's bullshit. It's all a way of, again, it's just like the big, in Colorado, you have certain areas, you have Coors, you have the Colorado School of Mines, you have these industries that are producing so much and putting it into the earth. They just pay a fine every month.
Right.
These people that think that they're going to go after and change the laws, what ends up happening is that they leave the back door open, because they're not going to cause, for these small towns, their big money is coming from these companies that they're fighting against.
Well, the $2 million is just a start. The $2 million is just the $2 million is just a start. They're going to get more funding after that from
$2 million. I mean, do you realize? I mean, honestly and truly,
they got a billionaire behind them.
It's what?
They have a billionaire behind them.
Well, and maybe that will be it, but I find it hard to believe that anyone became a billionaire without being invested in something. And so that, again, I always question, what is the motive? Where is the money?
Yes, but most of the local leaders didn't even know what was behind it, though. And now they do.
Well, and so maybe that will make a change. Maybe it is, like you were saying, maybe it's bringing it to the light. I just have a hard time believing that the money is going to, because when it just shifts, you know, it's like people think that they have accomplished something, like with women's rights and all these other things. It's like everybody's jumping up and down because they think that they've gotten somewhere, they've evolutionized, and it's total bullshit. It's just more of the same story, manipulation to take us into another path of suppression, but it looks differently, so everybody's like wanting to have a parade.
But that's the point. I think we have gotten to a consensus among the people of America and perhaps the world. We know what's going on. We can see that the planet is being destroyed and that there is a very small group of people who are telling everybody what to do. I think we know that. The question is, and we've had this at different times throughout history, where the people come to a consensus and there is change. I believe we have come to consensus and we're continuing to go there, and there will be change. The question is, how do we bring about that change, and what is the change we want to see?
Well, I think that is the question, because how much change do people really want to see? Let's be realistic about this. Because when you're talking about, especially in America, now I cannot claim for other countries, but here, do I want to stop going to the grocery store personally for myself? No, I don't. I do not want to lose the convenience of my life. Not that I'm not willing to give them up if it were for the better of all good, but it's also to a point of like, do our lives are convenient because that's how we've asked for it. These people come in and exploit us because we want the easy way. We're busy. We're working all the time. You've got now, like, just like with the great, you know, woman's revolution. Now you've got both parents out working. You've right. got the whole family structure completely fucked up. And so let's make sure that we, you know, tie in things that make it a little harder for us. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not like we're not living on the farms anymore because that's not the way we've set it up. And we can blame all of these. We can blame the government. We can blame these industries. But we are the people. We are the ones who have created this. And we're the ones who sit back. And it's not about doing nothing because we do stuff. If you take a look, people are voting. People are contributing and donating all over the place. They're just doing it from their head lodged up their ass instead of from their consciousness.
So,
sorry.
So, no, that's good. How do we change it to see what the majority of us want? You're absolutely right. Nobody wants to go out and start shooting chickens or deers or beef. I mean, but something.
Holding accountable. This is the whole thing. It's like, I'm telling you what, if you had these, like everybody knows about these horrible places that are killing the chickens and the cows and stuff, like they're just these horrid slaughter mutation. Blech. Okay, if they had 1,000 people show up there and say, we are not putting up with this shit anymore, we're going to tear this shit down right now. It's all coming down and we're going to put it up the way it's supposed to be. And if not, we're going to shoot you in the fucking head. Sorry, I'm from Colorado. It's like, we have had enough.
I'm from Iowa.
I guess maybe I should have asked you just to talk like a sailor, and you might not have. We've only got about 10 minutes left here.
Not supposed to do that. Sorry, folks.
We've only got about 10 minutes left here, but yeah, I mean, what's the solution? Is it non-compliance, or is it well, I know it starts at the local level. I think that is it.
It has to start at the local level.
Yes.
And I think there's also a part of it that is networking at the local level.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up earlier is the system knows that the sheriffs in every county and every town has the authority over the township, over the counties. And they've been attacking the sheriffs for quite a few years now.
Right. They have. And I read articles on it all the time that the federal government's afraid of the sheriffs because the U.S. Constitution specifically mentions them.
Well, yeah,
They're afraid they wouldn't want to bring back a draft because they like having an army that is paid by them. Yeah.
You know, there's been a movement in the last 6-7 years here, Scott and Cherry, all over the country. The sheriffs are getting together and they are talking about these issues, and they're going over their own authority and the powers that they have. And right. They're being reminded. There's a sheriff that's 30 miles from me. I had him on the show once. He took on the FDA and he told them to get lost. He told them if they ever come back in the area, he was going to arrest them. They were illegally harassing a Amish farmer. He was selling organic.
But see, now, in most, you know, and so in smaller areas like that, I can see, and you're right, those are the areas that need to stand up. But when you've got these major cities and you've got people that are just like, you know, massive amounts. I mean, here in Denver and Colorado, there's 5 million people. That's the same equivalent as a whole country in Europe. And so you're talking about trying to control or trying to put the masses under something that you cannot know every single person in your district. It's not like how it was in the farm country where you've only got 5 neighbors. So of course you're going to at least know gossip about them. You know, I mean, there's going to be something. It's not.
So
it's
Sherry,
not like
let
that.
Me ask you a couple of questions. Because I'm actually going to be involved in doing a court case with regard to this. The 425 number got put into law finally in 1929, but the way the Constitution was written, there was supposed to be between 30 and 50,000 members in a district, and there was supposed to be some way, either through acquaintanceship or friendship, you could know people. And there are states that have this type of system. So guess how much we pay our congressmen, and then guess how much we pay their aides. I mean, if you took all the aides and instead you made them congressmen with smaller districts so that they became more accountable to the people, because I think you and I both
agree.
That's what we want. We want a representative that's accountable to the people. Well, that means we don't want to just, it's not about term limits. It's about getting more representation for
separating the districts.
And yes, exactly.
And that's
one of the things that we are starting to do, and we are
manager
looking at
safety
legal
and so that's where you start battling with land management, because they are the ones, it's the management of safety, it's land management, it's the Bureau of Reclamation, because those three are the ones who are controlling the water rights and the land. So what they're doing is they're taking a collective, right? We think it's by district because, oh, there's so many people, this and that. But if you actually look at the layout, it's about the fucking money again. It's always about the money. So what you start doing is you just start yanking it. You start pulling the money. You start not allowing them to have access through the state. And how you do that is you start filing petitions. And I mean, just start overloading them with paperwork, because that's the one thing that they don't want to do is actually work. So if you start bombarding them with paperwork, so much paperwork, then all of a sudden your squeaky wheel is going to get attention, and that's how you start to shift things, because nobody wants somebody else up their ass.
Well, I think what we have come here today is with a consensus, same consensus we came to on our show, Taking Back Our Country, that the only way to start is locally. You got to get off your
booty.
Booty, yeah, or butt, or whatever. I don't know how you call it in Kansas. We say ass in Iowa. Or
here too.
Now you got to get off your ass, and you got to go down to your city hall or to your county government, and you got to let them know that you're watching them. And in fact,
yes,
they prefer to go sit in courtrooms and let the judges know that you're watching them and that you're going to vote. For me, I'd like to see a lot of millennials get into power sooner rather than later. I think
exactly.
It's my generation that has screwed this whole thing up. But the millennials have lived with this, you can't go bankrupt from student debt. And by the way, we're going to sell you these high-priced textbooks that you can put on your student debt, but then you can't go. I mean,
don't even get me going on with that. You know, that's, I kept my books because I was so pissed off about the fact that I spent hundreds of dollars on one book and they want to give you $12.99.
Right. And they want you to pay for it with student loans that you have to be paying for the rest of your life. I mean, if it's happening to you, you get it. So the millennials get it.
Right.
The people in my generation are this, well, you didn't pay your note, did you? I mean, that's not what it's all about. These people were defrauded.
You can't even, this is the whole thing about it, is unless you, and this is, I'll be honest with you, I got out of being in criminal law and being in the firm, which I'm not going to mention on the show, but being with the firm that I was with, it's very high profile. We only dealt with certain amounts of things. And I saw so much of what you're talking about that it finally, it got to a point of where I just decided no.
It makes you want to throw up. And
it's so bad.
About the law. But the thing is, if you look up, I mean, I started thinking this is just about foreclosure, but then I looked at the criminal law, then I looked at the over-incarceration, then I looked at the malicious prosecution, then I looked at the medical kidnap, then I looked at CPS. I mean, the system is corrupt, so corrupt, you can't fix it.
You can't, this is what I was saying. It's like, it's not fixable. It's like, I just did a thing. I'm researching on the prisons because, you know, in the United States, we have what? It's a phenomenal.
So
it's just ridiculous. Well, here's what I find out. Not only are they a private institution.
We only got about a minute left here.
Everybody pretends to know that.
And did you know that they have contracts where the cities and states have to provide them with so many prisoners?
We're almost done for the hour here, guys.
Do you know your 401ks are run from the private prison? Stephen, I'm sorry.
We don't have a lot of time.
Forget the time thing. We'll just talk forever. Nah, just kidding. But
I'm just kidding. I'm sorry, Stephen. We
can talk. We've got to grow the consensus. People need to know what's going on because until we all do, we're not going to get the change.
And I thank the two of you for coming on, Scott and Cherry.
See you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye, guys. Talk to you soon. And we'll be right back, everyone, in just a few minutes.